It's the Mike Tech Show, show number 473. This show is a proud member of the Tech Podcast Network. If it's tech, it's here. Please visit techpodcast.com. Welcome to the podcast. I'm your host, Mike Smith. Thank you very much for downloading and subscribing to the show. Please visit the main website at miketechshow.com. You can email me questions and suggestions for show topics. My email address is miketechshow@gmail.com. You can leave me a voicemail message. The phone number is 240-949-2450, and that's Mike Tech Show. All one word on Skype. I got three voicemail messages that I'm going to get to in a couple minutes. You can follow me on Twitter, twitter.com/MikeTechShow. And check out the Facebook page, which I would like everybody to go like. There is a Mike Tech Show page. And then you can also follow me on Facebook, and that's facebook.com/MikeTechShow. We have the wiki. Check that out. It's mtswiki.com. There you'll find links to all of the past shows and the show notes and the audio to be able to download. It's a great resource for the show. I have lots to talk about tonight. Office 2013 I have been using on a regular basis for the last couple weeks, and the annoyances that everybody has been dealing with, I'm presented with right in my face. And they're so bad, I had to fix a couple of these annoyances. I got four great tips that if you are using Office 2013 or know someone, you're going to want to deploy these tips, because it is going to make a big difference. Before we get started, Instant House Call is what I use to support my clients. A lot of my retainer clients, and also one-off clients, clients that just call me up and I say, go to my site. They download the client. I connect in. There's a feature that I rarely talk about that's incredible, and it is a feature that gives you the ability to record everything you do. It's an audit trail, or you can use it for training. So if you're in there and you are going to be clicking on different things and maybe showing someone how to rename a file and run something, click record. It's going to save an AVI local to your system that you can just send right to the client. That's an incredible feature, and you can have access to that and try it out free for 15 days. But you have to click on the link at miketechshow.com, click on the Instant House Call banner on the left-hand side of the page. You'll go right to Instant House Call and sign up for the trial and enter the promo code MikeTechShow, and you're going to get a 15-day trial of the best remote control, remote support software that's on the market today. I'm an Office 2010 user on my new system that Carrie sent me. I had to make a decision. Do I put Office 2010 or Office 2013? I have licenses for both. I put on 10. I have 10 on my older system. But when I was setting up my laptop that I take with me consulting, it has Windows 8, and I put Office 2013. Don't really do much with it because I'm doing so many other things on that laptop. Well, the last few weeks, I've been living on that laptop 2 days a week with one of my biggest clients, and I've had to do a lot of writing. So that meant spending a lot of time in Word. And I find it so infuriating, some of these things that were default in Office 2013. And one of them, I don't get this, and I'm going to give you the first fix for tonight. There's four fixes. The first one, is a website that will give you a batch file and a little script to change all the menus from all caps. I want to know what person in Microsoft actually thought that having every single menu item all capital letters. I think it is, it's just horrible. It looks like it's screaming at you. It's like, we don't want people typing in all caps when you're in a chat. Or did you ever get that email and everything's in all caps? Why? Who in Microsoft actually thought that it was a good idea to put all caps for the menus? Well, this little fix, you run this, and for the whole suite of Office apps, it's going to change that to where the first letter is capital and the rest is lowercase. Now you look at it, and it's just a little more pleasing to the eye. You know, just that little thing makes a big difference. That's tip number one. The splash screen that we are presented with, I hate. I can't stand it. When I click on Word, I want to go right into it and I want to start typing. I don't want the splash screen. What you can do to get rid of that, it's very simple. Go to Word, Options, then in general, it's just a little checkbox. Down at the bottom, it says Show the Start Screen when the application starts. Uncheck it. And now you got it. And now that splash screen will go away. That's the second tip. The third tip, the ribbon bar. I like my ribbon bar. I don't want it to disappear. Why can't I have my ribbon bar available all the time? Well, next time you're in Word or Excel or PowerPoint for 2013, up in the far right-hand corner, you have an X, then you got a little window, then you got the minus sign, then you got a little arrow. Go click that arrow and it drops down a menu that gives you three options: auto hide ribbon, show tabs, and show tabs and commands. If you want it look and feel like Office 2010, pick show tabs and commands. That's tip three. Tip four. I am so tired of when I go to save my file, we get a screen that the default is SkyDrive. It's Microsoft continuously trying to ram things down our throat that we may or may not want. Well, that's not my default place to save a file. I want my default to be my computer. So let's make that the default. Click on, again, Options. If you're in Word or Excel, all the programs have this. Go down to Save. So in Word Options, you now have General Display, Proofing, and Save. Highlight Save, and off to the right, you're going to see a little checkbox for Save to Computer by default. Check that. That's tip four. These are four tips that I think makes a big difference in opening it, saving, and then the look and feel, having the ribbon there all the time and not having that annoying menu. There's one fix I wish I could tell you. It doesn't exist. They only give you the following background color options or border options. You have white, light gray, and dark gray. What's wrong with these people? They pushed blue in Office 2003, right? Remember that with blue? Everything was blue and they had great blue themes. And then you can have that theme in Office 2010. Why? Why would they keep everything so flat, so plain, and so horrible? Do you know there's a lot of people complaining about eye strain because you either get the white, the light gray, or the dark gray, and that's it. There's no other way for you to change the color. Right off the bat, that's a big showstopper for a lot of people. And you know what? I get it. After spending hours looking at this, it's a very annoying, flat colored. You can get the eye strain. It's terrible. Why not give us some options? What? How much code would it have taken? An extra 10 minutes to be able to have a drop down that you can then add a color? Come on. So I'm reading the forums on Microsoft's TechNet. Do you know there's no intention of them addressing that? And they say so. There's hundreds and hundreds of complaints. People begging for this option. Please put it in. I mean, hundreds, thousands of people just asking for it. You know what Microsoft said? We don't care. You get what we give you, and these are your options, and we're not changing them. You got Microsoft employees actually responding almost that way. Their arrogance is going to cost them. You got to listen to the user base and what they want, and you got to have options, and you got to just be a little bit more flexible to make your product visually appealing. And that's the problem with Office 2013. When you first open it up, it's like, ew, you know, you're taken aback by it, and you're really, can I change this and make it like something that I want to look at? And as you dig deep, you find that your options are very limited. But the four tips that I just covered, there's two separate links that are going to be in the show notes. One to that batch file that you can download that'll change the all caps to be, you know, the first letter and then the lowercase. And then I have a link to another site that details those three other tips, because I have to have certain things. And this last one, if I could change the color, I'm all in. I'm ready to commit to Office 2013 if I can get some color changes. Just because of my eyes, I can't take the gray and I can't take the white. Given that, for me, I'm sticking with Office 2010 on my main system that I use here at my house. And I'll tell you, there's a moment I was thinking of actually uninstalling Office 2013 and putting another Office 2010 on my laptop. I'm giving it that old college try. I am doing everything I can to be patient and trying to stick with it and make it work. As I continue to get more tips for making the Office 2013 to make it taste better, I will share them with you. Oh, one more tip. And this is more of a warning. And I mentioned this way back when Office 2010 came out. When you get the retail DVD or CD, or even when you're downloading it, depending on how you purchase this, you will have the 64-bit and the 32-bit option. Even though you're on a 64-bit operating system, you do not want to deploy the 64-bit version of Office. Even Microsoft warned you. By default, they install the 32-bit. You have to go out of your way to install the 64-bit. Do not get confused because you have a 64-bit operating system that you should run the 64-bit version. As a matter of fact, you're going to put yourself in a position where you cannot do a lot of add-ins, especially for Outlook. Most of the add-ins have not been converted and will not work with the 64-bit version of Office. There's one killer feature for you to go to 64-bit Office. And that is, if you have an Excel spreadsheet greater than 2 gig. And you know what? If you know someone that's got an Excel spreadsheet greater than 2 gig, I want to know about it. Okay? That's the only reason to go to the 64-bit version of Office. So remember, 64-bit version of your operating system, absolutely. But install the 32-bit version of Office. Life will be a lot better for support, for upgrading, and for compatibility with the rest of the world. Let's start with the first voicemail, and this is about taxes from Kyle.
Hey, Mike, this is Kyle with ProTech Guy out of Framingham, Massachusetts. And I'm not sure if you're familiar, but Massachusetts recently got hit with a basically a labor tax in the IT world, which is on pre-written software and services with that software. Somewhat confusing, but it got me thinking about taxes and businesses. My basic understanding for business taxes is you collect the tax from the customer, and here in Massachusetts at 6.25%. Then you pay that tax during tax time, and your expenses throughout the year for your business and things like that are deducted from that tax that you pay. If that's correct, just kind of clarification as I grow my business here and kind of get it off the ground, that would be great. And any other tips you have for tax season, things like that, if you maybe have an accountant or you do it yourself, that would be awesome. Great show. Looking forward to the next installment. All right. Thank you. Bye.
Kyle, you're actually incorrect. When you pay your taxes for the sales tax, you send in that amount. There's no deductions. That's what you pay the state. That's it. There's no choice. Your federal taxes, yes, that's where you deduct your expenses. There's a difference between the sales tax when you sell something versus the federal taxes you pay on your income, where you're going to have a Schedule C and you're going to be doing all the deductions for your business. I can't strongly, any stronger than you have to have an accountant. If you have a company, unless you are a CPA, you need to have a CPA, an accounting firm, someone do your taxes. You got to do it. You don't want to get into trouble. They will help you with all the deductions, and I wouldn't ever consider doing my taxes on my own. It's too complicated when you have a business. You need someone to guide you through it. Don't do things that you're not in your comfort zone. If you're not an expert, don't do it. Get a CPA. Make sure for the sales taxes, they'll help you with that. CPA will put you on the right path and also help you with gathering all of your expenses and all of your deductions so you won't have anything to worry about. Next voicemail from Roger.
Hi, Mike. This is Roger calling from Minneapolis. Just wanted to let you know of a program in response to your last week's show, a program for converting audio files that's absolutely free, and it sounds a lot like your DB Power Amp. It's called LAME XP, and it's over at SourceForge. It uses all the cores and sounds pretty much almost exactly like DB Power Amp, except for it's free. I've been using it for a couple of years now, and I absolutely love it for converting all my WAV files into MP3s. It also handles FLAC and Ogg Vorbis and a multitude of other formats. I just wanted to pass that on. One more question I would have for you or your listening audience. I would want to know the best way to take an audio playlist and burn it to either a data CD, audio CD, or even just a USB stick and have the songs play in order. I've been trying to look around for that on the internet. I could not figure out a way of doing that. If anybody knows a way of taking a playlist and having them either go to a USB in order or burning them onto a CD in order in a fairly easy way. Maybe there isn't one, but please let me know. Thanks, Mike. I love the show. Bye.
Well, you had a tip for me with that LAME XP, and I am absolutely going to download that and test it out. Download CD Burner XP. Don't be confused by its name. Actually works beautifully with Windows 8 and Windows 7, and it can burn DVDs as well. When you open it up, you can click to make an audio CD, and you can drag and drop your music in the exact order that you want to play. So I've taken playlists, I've taken whole groups, and just dropped it right in to CD Burner XP, and it's burned it in the exact order that I want to play. I think that's what you're looking for. Give it a try. Now, Uncle Al mentioned CDX. Now, I've only used that to rip CDs. I've never used it to burn, so I'm not sure. But CDEX is a great program to rip your audio from a CD and preserve all of the ID3 tags and have it in the format that you want to rip it and the right bit rate. Another great, great program. DB Power Amp allows you to burn CDs and DVDs also. If you are into DB Power Amp like I am, and that's a feature that I've never really used, because with all of the expensive CD burning software that's out there, you get Nero and you get all kinds of programs that are out there. I love the free CD Burner XP, and it's available via Ninite, so you can install it when you're installing all your other free apps. Our last voicemail from Kate.
Hi, Mike. It's Katester, Kate Eels, calling you from sunny Kelowna, B.C. I just wanted to mention that I'm starting to run into something on customer machines, and I think it might be worth passing along to your listeners. I'm starting to see it as a trend. If I see something on one machine, I think, huh, that's weird. If I see it on two or three, I'm thinking trend. And here's what I'm seeing. In the last 3 weeks, I have encountered three completely different customers, one with Windows, two with Macs. Everybody had 500 gigabyte hard drives. One of the Macs had over 300 gigabytes in videos, and I get that from doing the about this Mac and then advanced and then showing what's taking up the space on the hard drive. There was only 26 gigabytes of free space on that Mac, and the user was wondering why things were going so slowly. I think I know. I had another user who, I mean, is a very nice lady in her mid-70s. She had over 300 gigabytes of, I never even got around to figuring out what it was because we were having so much trouble booting it. I mean, basically, she just upgraded to a terabyte and had them dump everything back on there again. Bless her heart. Right now, next to me, is a Windows machine. It's Vista, so it's obviously from prior to fall 2009. That has a 500 gigabyte hard drive, which according to the diagnostics is hanging by a thread. So I'm trying to pull all the customer data off of that. And Fabs is telling me that on the first of two accounts I'm backing up, there are 392 gigabytes of data. I am thinking that people believe that they can just put, you know, five seasons of 24 on their hard drives and leave it there, and that there's not going to be any consequences at all. And in fact, we know there are. So it's just a thing to look for in the very first part of diagnosing what could possibly be wrong with someone's system. Because the one that I'm backing up from now, for instance, I know he has some infections because Malwarebytes just went wild. Even leaving aside the infections, he's got way too much stuff on there for Windows even to be able to handle anything, and that's not even dealing with the fact that the hard drive is going to fail. If I had spent time trying to clean out all the infection on almost a full 500 gigabyte hard drive, I would have found that the furniture looks very nice indeed on the Titanic, but it would still have been the Titanic. So even though I had to deliver this guy some bad news about his hard drive, the good news is it's not going to cost him 4 hours of my time to fix something and then have the hard drive fail. Anyway, that's my point. Just start by checking the not only the health, but the amount of data relative to the full capacity of the hard drive before you dive into using the many other tools that you have at your disposal. That's all I got, Mike. Thanks. Keep up the good work.
Kate, great voicemail. And I'm going to help everybody by approaching this from the Windows and the Mac. Let's talk about the Mac first. For those of you that are just Windows only and you're like, oh, I'll never use a Mac and I never need to. Well, you know what? If you're listening to this show, you are probably the go-to computer person. And there's going to be a relative, a friend, a family member, somebody that's going to have a Mac and they're going to come to you and they may have an issue. I'm going to give you some great tips here. When you want to find out the size of what's being used on a Mac, they usually have, it says, the default is Macintosh hard drive, and there's usually an icon on the desktop. But by default, in the newer OS X operating systems, they don't give you that. So the first thing is you got to get that icon. So when you have the Finder menu, and you get Finder by just clicking on a blank space on a Mac desktop. When you see Finder, click it and click Preferences. In Preferences, it says, show these items on the desktop. You have hard disks, external disks, and CD DVDs. I checked them all. So this way, you have the hard drive. Now, how do you find out how much space is being used? Well, it's very easy. Once you click and you see that hard drive and the icon appears, you need to right-click that icon. Well, guess what? Right-click by default is suppressed on the Mac. That's okay. There's a control key on the keyboard. Hold the control key while you left-click the icon, and that gives you a right-click. When you get that right-click, there's Get Info. Click it, and it's going to tell you how much space you have on your hard drive. So now, once you have that, and you know now they need, if they're running out of space, they need to archive. Everybody should be backing up everything. But there's a difference between backing up and archiving. Let's move to Windows. On Windows, use Tree Size Free. It's a free program that you can run on the drive, and it will give you a great listing of where all of the size of all the directories and the space that's being consumed. You can just open up the little plus signs and drill down to what is consuming the space. Once you get an idea of what is consuming the space, and if you find out it's music or it's movies, you now need to educate the person on archiving. If they have a full desktop and they can add a secondary internal hard drive, great. And if it's SATA, go buy them a 3-terabyte drive or a 4-terabyte drive and put it in there. And now have them use that so they have sort of infinite space. It's what I did here. I have a carry system. There was a 3-terabyte hard drive, but that's not the primary. Well, it's the main one I'm using, but I boot from an SSD disk. I added a second 3-terabyte drive just for movies and music and TV shows. I know they're going to consume gigs and gigs and gigs of space, and it's space that I don't even want to back up. So I have just another internal drive just dedicated for massive amounts of things that I want to save, like movies and different things. Well, the same for the Mac. You got to create another place for you to archive it. I am going through this now with my photographer client who hoards pictures. So here's what we do. I teach them how to take their pictures, or in this case, Kate's case, movies, and now move them to an external disk. So you get an external drive, you hook it up via USB, and you move those files to it. You teach the person how to access it, and then you go back onto the hard drive and you delete it. So now the person either A, they have to clean up, or if they are a file hoarder, then we got to organize the hoarding for them. So we got to teach them to archive. Recommended in the chat, NAS devices. I mean, for your typical home, I don't know if you need a NAS. I don't even know if you need to go to that. For a small business, yes, I would recommend a NAS. But a NAS for home, here's, give you an example. A NAS is data that's critical to you, and it's fault tolerant where you got RAID. Do I need my five seasons or eight seasons of 24 that are all digital? Do I want that on very expensive rated hard drive space? No. I want it on a cheap 3 terabyte SATA drive that I picked up for $100 from Newegg or Amazon. A NAS device, I think, important files that if something happens to one of those drives, it's not a backup, but if something happens to one of those drives, I can keep working because it's got RAID 1 or RAID 5. That's where I kind of look for, you know, positioning NAS versus just a bunch of disks for non-important but very space-consuming items. Does that make sense? There's a difference between backing up and archiving. And you want to have backups, but then you also want to be able to archive because you want to put them at a drive that I can get at a moment's notice and I can call it up when I want it and be able to view it, and I don't have to go through a restore. There's no magic answer for this. It's brute force cleaning. You, the user, are the only person that knows what you want to archive, and you got to be disciplined to take those files and move them to an external storage or a secondary storage. And it's hard, but when faced with your system not being able to run because you ran out of space, well, that the message might get through. And I'm seeing this as Kate's seeing it. I don't think I've seen it as much as she's doing it, as she's seeing it. I see music collections, and that's where I run into when someone's migrating from one computer to another and they got large iTunes library that they invested a lot of money into it. What happens, you know, when you got that investment, well, how do you move that? And there's some tips and instructions there that you can Google on moving your iTunes depot to another location. And that's not hard. You can pick up your whole iTunes media library, move it to another storage media, and then go into your iTunes and change it to go point to where you just moved it, and everything's fine. So it's not that hard. And especially movies that you download or rip an archive for archival purposes because you own it, and you have that now digital, that's easy to just pick that up and copy it and then go delete the original. Delete it where, you know, knowing that you did archive it. Hopefully that helps. I want to thank Ken in the chat who has provided us with a great link. What is the difference between archives and backups? So I'll make sure that's in the show notes. And you really want to understand that an archive is a file that's not going to change that you want to have access to. Where a backup is backing up files that could be changing. So that's another way of looking at this. It just brings up another interesting topic that we've never touched on. And that's why I'm spending the time on this. Kate, thanks for stirring it up, supplying content for the show. I really appreciate it. And we had this large stack of email. Guess what? It's going to have to wait till the next show. And I promise I will get to it. Maybe there'll be even a surprise show before next Thursday. Follow me on Twitter, twitter.com/MikeTechShow, or Facebook, facebook.com/MikeTechShow. And if you purchase anything from Amazon, how about all the back-to-school needs? Oh, my. Anything that you could possibly think of is supplied by Amazon. And if you purchase from Amazon or know someone, please share my link. amazon.micnation.net. There, your price stays the same, but you know what? It gives back, and the commission from your purchase helps support the show, and it goes a long way, and it really makes a difference. That's amazon.micnation.net. Use that. Thank you so much for everybody who has taken the time and used that link. I really appreciate it. And don't forget our sponsor, and that is Instant House Call. Click on the link on the website and give it a try. It's great remote access, great for remote support. And that's it for tonight's show. I want to thank everybody for downloading and staying subscribed. I'll talk to you next week, but I have a sneaking suspicion there'll be another show before next week. And I will see you then. Bye-bye, everybody.
You've been listening to The Mike Tech Show, a proud member of the Tech Podcast Network. Please visit techpodcast.com.